You're listening to Maneuvering Mondays, a podcast about transforming work culture.
This is the second part of the episode, and in this part, we have invited one or more guest experts to share their best advice to Marie from Zebra Apps.
So your hosts are me, Anne-Katrine, and
Anna Rosendahl.
And for this first commentary episode, we have invited two guest speakers to give their feedback to Marie and the situation at Zebra Apps, Klaus and Puk. Welcome, Klaus. Welcome, Puk.
Puk Falkenberg is a change enthusiast. She's a seasoned keynote speaker on the topics of change management and leadership, and she's one of the co-founders of Good Morning April, where they help their customers understand, navigate, and create the futures of work. Klaus Wagner Pedersen is an agile transformation expert from Syndicate. He has worked with leadership and not least culture for many years. Klaus and his colleagues facilitate wonderful courses on agility and leadership in different formats, which you can find on Syndicate's website.
Thank you both for coming. We're really excited to hear what you think about these two first sections of the story of Marie. I guess our first question is, how would you describe in your own words what the story episode was about?
In my own words, I think there's something rotten in the organization that Marie is part of. They grew and have all the right perks and such, but it seems like they don't have the right matching way of working and culture. That was what I read between the lines and what was also talked about with Marie and the perks, I guess.
Yeah, so in general, for me, it's kind of it's an introduction to Marie, right? To who is she and kind of the organization as well and Zebra Apps and this kind of the end of the month dread where people are quitting, I don't know if we've all been, I've been there at least, at least also seeing Marie's reaction to the people quitting, how she reacts to the message she's giving by several people, and also to her reactions to her leadership, both to Mark and also to Natalie and their kind of input to what is happening, and also her reaction to Natalie's kind of like, it's your responsibility message, and yes, and also to Mark's separate reaction to why is it your responsibility, I think, and also in the end kind of her trying to kind of bogged down and trying to solve it all, or start to solve it at least.
And does she really get the coffee stain off? That's like a to be continued part of these two sections.
That's going to be a cliffhanger for some of the next episodes.
Yeah. It's going to be a stain forever on the table.
I think it's very interesting that you right away comment on some of the dynamics between Marie and Mark and Natalie. Maybe we could just explore that a little bit. How do you see their different understandings of what is going on here?
So I think there's definitely there's something going on, at least between herself and Mark. Just the fact that your boss, after a comment, just stands up, leaves, bumps the door, and just storms out is, let's just say, it raises eyebrows. It's interesting what's going to happen in the next chapters, in the sense that what's this going to happen in that relationship, because it doesn't necessarily seem that healthy. From my perspective, at least.
No, but I was also wondering, with the reaction from both Mark and Natalie, that if this is a managerial problem, that people are quitting because of the management or how things are handled or the rhythms or way they work, so the culture, just how those two speak in this storyline, I'll be like, something's maybe off. And if that's the case, then Marie also have a big job ahead of her, because how can she change this problem if the two she is reporting to and should collaborate with have this attitude? It's going to be tough, I guess.
I think as well, I think also the reaction from Natalie is kind of like, you could have hoped that a manager on that level would say that that is our problem, let's solve it, rather than saying that's your problem.
And also, she's laughing in the phone. That's like, hey, take this serious. People are leaving your company and they don't like to be here. Don't laugh at that. That's like a huge issue.
Laughing and doing something suspicious with the bubble wrap or whatever it is she's doing.
Good. Well, how about we zoom into some of the models or theories that you may have thought of while you were reading this part of the story. What could fit?
So my thoughts went to this profile mapping assessment where you take the different organizational stages from Laloo and combine it with different disciplines within organizational designs, like how are we organized, how is our culture, how is leadership, how is innovation, and all kinds of different disciplines. And then you map out. So is our leadership orange in Laloo's model, or is it teal or green? And you map these different disciplines, and then you get like this assessment of where the organization is at. And then you might even see that some of the leadership or management is maybe even red. And I don't know if your listeners know these different terms, but red is like the mob where one is like shooting at the employees and directing orders. And then in the opposite end, there is teal, where it's self-leadership and an evolutionary purpose. And in between, you have all different kinds of bureaucratic or family-ish companies. And my guess would be that they have, if you map it out, in Marie's case, they would have something that is off. So they might be, in most parts, maybe green and teal, but they might have something that points towards red, and that can be where it conflict with the employees, because they have good perks, they can do what they want. She talks with Jason about his values, so they are oriented around individual values and purpose of why people go to work. And it seemed like even the CEO Natalie knew Jason's values, so they must have some conversation about that, which indicate more teal than red. But then the way Natalie and Mark reacted, that's more towards amber and red. So I would use that theory and map it out and assess where's the company. And then when you have done that, I would ask, so where do we want to be? And where is there some conflicts? And you can do this exercise by yourself. Marie could do that as a start to put in her slides for Natalie. Or she could do it actually together with employees and managers, asking, where do you see us? Maybe all the managers and maybe their popcorn can pop. They can see, oh, our mindset is maybe a bit off, or we need a new approach or attitude. And then it might be easier to have that dialogue around why people are leaving them, to see that gap between where we want to be and where we actually are and how people experience us as a company. So that would be my first go-to.
I think the first model I thought of when I had that question, what models do you kind of see in this, was actually looking at, for me, was the first thing that pops up was the five stages of grief. So kind of looking at Marie's reaction in that, in the starting in denial and, oh, I know what this conversation is going to be about with Jason. And then also trying to kind of, he goes into the anger aspect as well, thinking that, oh, why is he quitting? He doesn't like defense stuff, and he's trying to bargain. What is he getting out of it? And this is the soda. also goes into a bit of the anger perspective of the wise, and it floats out of in the conversation with Mark as well, I think, and her sitting down with a notebook, but also going into the acceptance of trying, okay, so this is actually something that is happening, so what can I do about it? And trying to call up all her connections to try and figure out what is actually happening and what are their benefits. That was kind of the first thing that came into mind. Looking into other models, I think, so what could be a fun angle, and I don't know if it fits this, but I think it's always fun to kind of look at strange models for odd cases. And I don't know if you know the trends, it's a very hard word, trans-theoretical model. It talks about different stages of change. It's actually, I think it was done in the 70s or something like that, but it was actually done to help people quit smoking. But they've actually tried doing it on organizations as well. And I think it has some fun perspectives into looking at an organization in the way of, it talks a bit about, are you getting into contemplation? And when you get to figure out that you are in contemplation, you have to do actions to get into to do something new. So look into that if you're curious about it. But I think it's quite fun to see that it's clear that they're talking about that. Why is this happening? Because our organization used to be an awesome place. So how have we come to a place of kind of contemplation, saying that? So have we not done anything to keep it awesome, right? So it's actually become, I don't know, non-awesome in that sense. So what actually happened? And kind of looking into that, is Marie starting to gain some actions from that in the sense of doing something about it?
That sounds like a very interesting model to look further into.
Yeah.
Klaus, I really like what you said with the first one about grief. I didn't notice, but as you said it, I'm like, yeah, sure, that fits as well. And it made me wonder if there's also something around trust and commitment, like the five dysfunctions of a team, because Mark is saying they shouldn't go to you, they should go into my office, but apparently they don't trust him with the information of quitting and why they're quitting.
Yeah.
So I think she has there's a fundamental problem of flagging and trust to the managers, but they trust her with that information and they hope that she can do something about it. She states that herself, I guess, in the story as well. I need to do something about this.
Yeah.
Maybe following up a little bit on the whole Jason situation, based on what we've read in this piece here, why do you think that he's quitting?
I think from my perspective, it's an escape. It sounds like an escape, right? It sounds like a huge escape that you should really think about if you're a manager, right? If he is, his Twitter handle was something with Pacifist Jason or something like that, right? And I think someone with a Twitter handle that says Pacifist in it, then goes from a child app company to a defense contractor with lower pay. That definitely sounds like not going for something new. She also talks about it, Marie, in the text, that it doesn't seem like he's going for something new. He's just trying to escape, right? And if people are compromising some of their core values to escape from a company, I think that it really has to sound a lot of alarm bells at that company, right?
And I'm a bit curious because he says you should talk to Anna. And a bit, who is Anna? Is that his line manager or is it that another employee, or who is she and why does she know? Why does he know what's wrong? So I'm curious about that because he puts a lot of, you know, saying she knows you need to talk to her, and Marie is dreading that call. So there might be something there. And I'm curious to know, yeah, everything you said, Klaus, and then is there more to it that Anna knows? I think so too. When you're quitting without, you know, anything on your hand like Simon, or with compromising your values, that something rotten is up.
Yeah, there's definitely more to the Anne story than we hear in this chapter. That is to be continued.
Cliffhanger.
Yeah. I have a follow-up question for Klaus, because earlier you mentioned that you've at least tried the situation where it's the end of the month and people are resigning, and I was just wondering if there's any experiences there you'd like to share, or was this a sign that something was rotten, or was it just a coincidence, or what are your thoughts there?
I don't think it was that bad. I didn't have anyone leaving for a defense contractor who was a pacifist, but I think kind of it was in my younger leadership days kind of thing. And I think one of the things about a situation when people are quitting, as a manager, it takes a lot of courage to ask, why are you quitting? Because you actually might get the truth from whoever you're asking. Yes. And the possible answer to that could be, it's you. So I think I hadn't been a leader for that long when that happened. And so looking back at that, I kind of regret not asking the question, why are you leaving? More kind of curious. So I've definitely been there. I think if it happened today, I would be more curious about it. But it definitely takes courage to ask that question. Also because that if you look at statistics, it's like kind of one of the main reasons people are leaving are their immediate manager. So there's a huge chance that, or risk, or however you want to look at it, and ask, perhaps also ask the question, say, what could I have done differently so you wouldn't have left?
Well, and maybe looking inwards, what could Marie's parts of the conflict be in this situation? What is hers to own, or what is her blame to take?
I think so. So Marie's part in the conflict, I don't know if she's, for me, she sounds like kind of that listener, right? They're not kind of afraid to go to her to quit. And you can kind of, either that's a good thing or a bad thing, but they're definitely, or maybe they're just afraid to go to Mark. And part of me also wonder why they didn't go to their kind of immediate manager, since Marie is part of HR. So why are they actually quitting at HR? That could also sound trouble with our direct manager, right? But I think Marie's part in it is that if you are in HR, and it seems like she's quite close to these people, right? She's hugging Jason as he leaves, so he definitely knows him. And from that perspective, I think her part of the conflict is maybe being unaware of what is happening. I can get a bit curious, that's what I'm trying to say, about what... why it comes as such a surprise to her. It's more of a reaction, looking at, oh, there's a lot of people quitting. What do we do? Rather than being proactive and saying, so let's make sure that people are not quitting, create a great environment around us, right? So it's a bit more reactive than proactive.
Oh, I was wondering what type of HR role she holds. Like, is she the hiring HR person or doing contracts, or... does she do everything? Is it only Mark and her in the HR department? Because I agree with you, Klaus. It's a surprise to her. And maybe it is that because she holds a role where she doesn't talk to the employees about them thriving, but she knows she has the personal conversations with them about their development. If she holds a role where she should know and ask how they're thriving, then... her part of the conflict is not knowing, not being aware, as you say, Klaus, because she's just acting as a dumping station or something right now, where both Simon and Jason dumps their resignation. And I guess how many has set up before them? 7 or something the past couple of months. So she's really been the dumping station, you know. So maybe she should also have asked and been curious on the first 2 resigning in February and January, and not waiting until March where Jason and Simon resigns, right? Maybe she should have been curious before. That could maybe have stopped Jason and Simon from leaving if she asked the question in January instead of March.
So what do you think could happen from here? If you were in Marie's shoes and all these people just quit, what kind of maneuvers could she take to progress the situation?
I think I would personally... I think it's fine that she's kind of investigating, is it the salary or is it the benefits? But I think I would... and that's just a personal kind of thing, but I think it would be more kind of... not that much quantitative effort, but more qualitative effort, looking into why are people quitting. Maybe also talking to the people who are still there, and getting into some conversation about, are they actually considering quitting, or are they? Why are they still staying there? What are they, and what are their troubles? But getting into more, not trying to make it as it seems very kind of KPI driven, and that's maybe just who I am. That's not me, but I would definitely dig into more of the people who are in it more than the details of, and just the fact that she just asks herself the question, it couldn't be the soda, could it? I think that's, I was kind of like, no, it's not the soda. Get over it, right? So it's, I think getting into knowing people more would definitely be my approach to it.
I agree. It's like, it would have been a very simple podcast episode with me just agreeing with Klaus. So I'll try to add to that and say that I would do the same as Klaus. And then when, you know, she goes with her presentation to talk to management and say, this is like the problem, so this is what I've gathered, I see 2 scenarios play out. I see one where she gets the buy-in from the manager saying, yeah, oh, that's a problem. We need to fix that. How do we do that? How do we go around it? And if it points to leadership and management, they need to ask the curious question, as Klaus also asked earlier, if Mark would do that. They need to be able to say, oh, so it's us. How can we change something that we do? How can we maybe work in a different way or expect in a different way or set other kind of KPIs? They need to look at that and how they speak. Might even their language could be some of the problems, as I think it's Jason that said that his work is not recognized. Maybe they don't speak about it or say it out in the right way. Maybe they just say, fine, and go on. But they need to say, oh, how did you do that? That looks nice. How did you do that? And this is awesome. And it helped with that and that and so and so. So that could be one scenario. The other scenario could be that they're completely blind around this and just have an attitude towards, you need to fix that. It's the employee's fault, not our fault. We need to find the employees that want to stay in this culture, in this environment, and can handle the culture and be robust or whatnot, resilience. So I think she has like two scenarios from that point. And if it's the latter, without a buy-in, then maybe Marie should wonder if she should quit as well. And if it's the first one where they're up to investigating the problem and figure out how their attitude might change or...
And maybe digging into what you said, Klaus, that it's definitely not the soda. Why is that? Because won't employees always gravitate towards the best package where you get most items in the bag?
So I think for me, it's of course, there's a level to it, but the perks mean so little in the end. Of course, it's what people brag about. Currently, if I meet people from the Lego group, they say they have a barista. If they meet people from other, they say they have a juicer or whatever, kind of like, but it's not really the reason why they're staying, right? It's nice. It's kind of a nice thing to add, but it's not a reason. It's not kind of like, I would not leave the company ever because they have free soda, right? So it's kind of a thing. It's nice to have, but it's not on the need to have basis, right? And I think it's the need to have things that you need to look at, and need to have is more in a, you have an environment where you actually feel like you are both appreciated, and you feel that you have colleagues that you can talk to, and that's way more important than any perk you can kind of give people, right?
There is this Danish union that did they do it every year, I guess, around how are you satisfied with work or thriving at work. And they did one year a focus on salary and perks, and they found out that it's a hygiene factor. When it's not present, you don't want to work there because you don't think you get the level of perks or salary that you're worth. But when it's above that hygiene, then it doesn't matter. Then it matters about colleagues, leadership, culture, mandate, mastery, all these other things that aren't perks as such.
It's more of the work environment. It's kind of like toilet paper, right? You're not going to, if it's not there, you're really going to complain about it, right? But if it's there, you kind of expect it to be there, right? You're not going to be overly excited about having an okay work environment. But if it's not there, you definitely can't complain.
Can I say one more thing before you go on, Ivana? When I've done workshop with people going about changing their ways of working and their culture, I always see when you do a keep try, like a sort of retrospective, there's always someone that asks for more cake or more fruit. And when they do so, I always assess them as an immature team, because if they were self-managed or maybe even agile, I hope you agree with me here, Klaus, they would just go out and buy that stupid cake. It wouldn't matter to them in a keep and try with their management or how the organizing is done in the organization, because they would just do it. If they ask for it, it's because they don't know if they have the mandate to go there. And that says something completely different around their culture. So I think that asking for soda it says something different. It's because lack of mandate or trust to just go and buy soda.
But other than that, I agree with you. That it's always funny that they have to kind of put up more cake. And I usually, when they put that up, I typically say that's a first world problem.
Yeah.
And as you say, yeah, go solve it. Buy some cake.
Exactly. It's an easy one to solve. Lack of trust and mandate. That's harder, you know.
Yeah.
Let's try having delegation and mandate. I can't buy that at the baker.
It would be so nice if you could just buy one unit of trust, please.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, and two roles of collaboration.
Yeah.
What do you think happens next in the story?
I think the question sparks in the sense that what I'm interested to hear about, I think definitely the whole conflict between Mark and Marie, I think that's interesting. And also her work around the more quantitative measures she's doing, if she's actually going to get anything out of it. And also a bit curious about Natalie's involvement. Is she going to get more involved than just saying this is your responsibility, or is she actually going to jump into this? And also learning more about the organization and maybe what's up with Anne, and why is she dreading that call?
Yes, definitely. I hope that this is a story where there is some sort of win, or I think win is maybe a bad word, because how do you win in work? I don't know, thrive. But I hope that we end up in a state where people are thriving and loves showing up at work in Zebra apps. And I think I'm like you, Klaus, I'm just waiting for the next part and what will happen. And I hope that there will be some conflicts that you as a reader or listener can learn from. And I hope that you are, you know, cheering for Marie on the way, like, yeah, Marie, go Marie. So I hope for that. But I think that I would expect some managerial conflict or problem or challenges to arise in the coming chapters. Because I think there is something to Mark and Natalie you should investigate.
So this is where we conclude. The book is a romantic. You like the kind of having that, oh, it's dreading, yes. And then, but the happy ending, it must be there.
Exactly. Yeah. There must be a conflict.
Zebra apps riding towards the sunset.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We need that.
Yeah.
We need that. 100 pages later, sunset.
I think I'm also looking forward to maybe some of the, I don't know, you're gonna call it the inner conflicts of Marie when she's finding out if some of it is actually on her or not. I think that's gonna be interesting as well.
Yeah, and actually, maybe I hope to get unpacked, because the way she is just focusing on that coffee stain, she wanna go there, but she gets disturbed by people resigning, so she never gets to clean it up. But she cares about it and thinks about it all the time. That means that maybe one scenario could also be that Marie burns out from all this, from being the dumping station and then not being able to help people and take care of them and fix this. She could burn out from that and be stressed, because the way she focuses on the coffee stain is maybe too much. Maybe it says something about her character. I don't know.
Awesome. Well, I think we're going to round off with one last question, and that would be, what can we learn from this part of the story?
The main key takeaway for me is that don't get stuck in contemplation. So don't think that if you are awesome, don't think that you'll just stay in awesome forever. So it is work. And as an organization, it takes hard work to stay as a great organization. We've seen just over the last couple of years as well, we've seen it in, just name dropping Basecamp for one. We saw that implode. And it was previously going as an awesome company. And then almost half of the company left due to maybe their contemplation saying that, yeah, we are an awesome company, and not kind of trying to sustain that. And I think that's for me is a huge takeaway that you need to consider when you are in an organization. It takes hard work to sustain your organization in a good place. If you are in a good place, it doesn't just stay there on its own.
Yes, I totally agree. I know this CEO who started in a company 15 years ago, and he made a plan like, this year we're going to focus on this, and next year we're going to focus on that. And he wanted to start with culture because he knew that was important. And after the first year, he was like, yeah, we're going to do culture one more year. the third year, yeah, we're going to do culture one more year. And then he realized that just focusing on culture each year and how we're doing, how we are thriving, how we want to work together, all that interpersonal collaborating stuff that makes your culture, he found out that all the other strategic goals he wanted to talk about, they were just by themselves completed and attained because they focused on the culture and how to get there. And then they got there. So to stay awesome, you need to work with staying off awesome. A big key takeaway. And I also think that you can, one of the key things you learn in this is to just, you know, listen. Don't think you know it all. Go ask people, because you need to be aware of what is going on. And I think maybe the Zebra apps, maybe they grew too fast, couldn't follow up talking with people or asking how they're doing by the coffee machine. There's this level where you become too many to remember everyone's names and pets' names and children's names and wife and husband's names. So
more than three.
Maybe yeah, around there. So maybe they grew beyond that number too fast. And she also speaks a bit about key employees that was there from the start. Maybe they forgot to listen to them and the new ones going along because it's just the way it is. They were awesome. They would stay that way. Yeah.
Yeah. I also think there's something learning in so I think there's a lot of people quitting, right? So I think that's not necessarily a good thing, but it's also a thing that I found that Todd's comment on the other company that she called, he said that you broke our perfect record. We only had one person leaving. And I think it's also for me a bad thing if no one is leaving, right? Because then you will not kind of get that kind of bit of new blood in the organization. And I think it was, I can't remember her name, but she's previous Netflix AR lady thingy. She said something at one point that said you want to build the kind of the ambassadors for your company. So when you leave, they leave your company, you want to have them to leave as ambassadors. So to say that, yeah, I used to work at that great company, right? And I think that's also actually part of spreading the word about great companies. It's also having people that go out into the world that has been happy being with your company. And having a bit of change is not necessarily a bad thing. So I think we should not just try to keep everyone there, but we should also not try to have everyone leave as current situation in Zebra apps, right?
I agree, Klaus. Because that it just make, you know, you want to stay true or loyal to the company, but you want to go out and investigate and learn something new. And maybe you'll come back when you have learned what you wanted to learn, right?
I think we're also getting past that kind of like people staying at the same company for 50 years, right? It's a bit of a change in the world that seeing people are changing from company to company and accepting that and not necessarily trying to keep them for whatever price, but actually wanting that rotation or whatever you want to call it.
I have one more question for both of you. How can our listeners reach out to you with follow-up questions?
I would say LinkedIn. That's the easiest way. Or Instagram or Twitter. My handle is the same, Puk Falken, everywhere. So,
yeah. So then I get to say what Puk said. you can find me on LinkedIn, Klaus Wagner Pedersen, if you're looking. I think any other of the social medias are not necessarily work related. I think Medium is a blog there from time to time under the handle Klaus VP. Klaus VP. It's kind of, yeah. Other than that, I do a lot of webinars. So if you go to syndicate.dk, you'll find stuff in there.
What are your thoughts on Marie's situation? Have you had a similar experience? And what would you have done? Join the conversation on our LinkedIn page and let's maneuver Mondays together.